originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Jude Feld and Anthony Stabile.
Good evening, everyone, wherever you may be in the world. Trainer Talk is on the air. Tonight's broadcast, sponsored by Fasig Tipton, is the show that trainers listen to. This is Jude Feld, and Anthony Stabile and I are very pleased to spend the next hour with you and our special guest. Tonight's trainer is really just beginning his training career, but has accomplished quite a bit in the last couple of years. He's run 139 horses to date in North America, with 15 wins, 20 seconds, and 11 thirds, earning over $1.2 million in purses. But that only tells part of the tale. His record in North Africa is even more impressive, where he is undefeated with a pair of Grade 1 Golden Shaheens on his mantelpiece and a few more millions in purses on his resume. Welcome to Trainer Talk, Chad Summers.
Thanks so much, Jude. It's a pleasure to be here.
Chad, your love of racing dates back to your youth. Give us a little synopsis of what really got you involved in this sport.
You know, I think growing up on Long Island, there weren't a lot of people that really love horse racing. And I loved coming out here with my dad and my brother. We used to come out for breakfast with the works at Belmont Park. Ironically, a show that Anthony's now hosting himself. But it was just one of those things where we just loved watching the horses train and breeze in the morning time. And then my dad would take us for the big races, only the big races. We'd come out for the Belmont Stakes and the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the Met Mile. And we'd spend a week vacation upstate, and we'd go to Saratoga a couple of times, and I just always loved the horses and every bit about the sport.
And the funny thing is, Jude, Chad and I started it together 4 years ago when the lady who used to do it wasn't here at NIRA anymore. Chad and I did it in 2015, I believe, and he's leaving out a very sordid detail of what he used to do when he came to Breakfast at Belmont. In fact, it was something he told others not to do as part of the tram tour here at Breakfast. Why don't you tell everybody about that, Chad?
No, that's okay. I don't want to get arrested.
No, why don't you tell everybody about that, Chad?
So they have this tram tour, and it just kind of guides you around the backside of Belmont Park. And, you know, oh, this is Bill Mott's barn, this is Kieran McLaughlin's barn, here's Todd Pletcher's barn, here are the tracks, et cetera, et cetera.
And we pass Funny Side, now we pass Tonalist.
Right.
They point out the markers, but some people need to get closer to the markers, apparently, than others do.
So I was in high school, and I was in love with a horse named Hap, as Jude is well familiar with, and I used to jump off the back of the tram when nobody was looking to go into Bill Mott's barn. I'd wait for Bill Mott to go to the track with his pony. And then I would sneak into the barn to go see Hap. I didn't care about Cigar and Yagley and all those horses. I just wanted to see Hap.
Well, that's how you and I met, was because of Hap. I'm sitting in the office at 505 Farm doing some paperwork on a Sunday afternoon, and I see somebody drive in. We weren't expecting any visitors. It was kind of a private farm. And so your dad comes to the door, knocks on the door, and says, you know, we understand that Hap is here at your farm. I said, well, yes, he is. And he said, well, it's my son's favorite horse. I'd like to show him Hap if that's possible. And I said, yeah, we can arrange that. It was around feed time, so the boys were already well into their afternoon chores. And I gave a call down to the barn and told him to get Hap ready, that we had visitors. And they were kind of excited about that because it was Sunday and there wasn't much going on. So they thought we had some real dignitaries there, and it turns out that it's a multiple Golden Shaheen-winning trainer that was actually showing up. But that's how I met you, and I gave you and your dad and your brother a dime tour around 505 Farm, and we went over and saw Hap, and you guys took some photos and stuff. It was quite a fun afternoon.
And then, you know, he ended up they didn't know at that point, they didn't know where he was going to stand stud, and that's why he was at 505. And he ended up going to Darby Dan Farm,
yep,
to where the stallion manager at Darby Dan used to hate me, because every April 15th, which was Hap's birthday, I would come there with a carrot cake, and the guy would look at me like I had three heads.
Yeah, well, they were standing Seattle slew there. When,
it was. It's funny, Jude, you talk about when you met Chad. So I hadn't seen Chad around the racetrack for a bunch of years. A bunch of people he worked for are some of my closest friends in the business. Chuck Simon, Michael Tenuzzo, he worked for Paranac. And the first time I got to really like socialize with him, when he was working for Michael at Aqueduct, and we were all going to go to breakfast about a mile away, and Michael told me to ride. I didn't have a car at the time. And he says, ride with Chad over to the breakfast place. And Chad goes to change his sneakers, and he takes these sneakers off, and they literally look like, if you've ever seen the really bad movie Encino Man with Brendan Fraser and Pauly Shore, it just looks like they came from like the prehistoric times. There was so much dirt on these things, you didn't see shoelaces or anything. And I said, can't Michael buy you a new pair of sneakers? And how much racetrack mud was on there? How many different tracks? You say 11 tracks that time?
Yeah, I think that's 11, including River Downs for Little Red, Jude's favorite horse.
Yeah, Little Red. He was a classic.
Nothing like going back to school in University of Kentucky when you go from Saratoga, spending a summer in beautiful Saratoga, to going down to River Downs to watch a maiden pen. And I was all excited. You know, Jude said the horse is training great, and he's training off the farm at Chestnut Farm, the farm that Mick Ruiz just purchased. And they're like, yeah, he's doing great. So I bet $100 to win, and we're walking over, because I got to make the walk too, right? Here I am coming from Saratoga. I got to make the walk, holding the hot walker bag, everything, at River Downs the day before I go to school. And I bet $100 to win on him early, and he opened up at 1-9.
I think he ended up paying $7 or something.
Oh, he won. It wasn't a terrible
trip. Of course
he won. And we went to that beautiful barbecue place. There was a barbecue place where they got the pig in front of the place, right on the Ohio River. It was great.
Yeah, the Boathouse.
Yeah,
Montgomery and Boathouse. Yeah, that's a tradition. But your dad at the end of our tour at 505, he said, you know, that you were planning on coming to UK, and I passed out business cards to you guys and said, you know, if you need anything, just give me a call. And
that was a big mistake.
That was a big mistake. like about a month and a half or 2 months later, however much time passed, I get a call from you, and you said, I'm here. Let's go to dinner. Typical college student. So, yeah, that was it. And then you worked at 505. You worked at Keeneland.
You took me everywhere. The greatestgame.org.
That's right.
We used to write articles about the owners in the game.
Right. That's right.
I mean, we did everything. It was great.
So
I would honestly say if it wasn't for Jude, I probably wouldn't be a trainer, let alone in this industry. Probably. That's how much I learned from Jude going there. Like, I went to school, but the real school was. All those dinners and all that time I spent with Jude was probably more important than anything I learned.
Well,
you're
a rare egg, because you know, like you said earlier, you didn't grow up in the game. Jude's been around the game. George Velasquez Flowers beat my dad to the hospital when I was born. So we're lifers. You kind of came in here on your own. So I'm sure being around a guy like Jude, not only offered up all the possibilities, but the dearth of knowledge and the wealth of knowledge is something you probably had never been exposed to.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for somebody like me that wanted the exposure of being in the industry, but I wasn't at the University of Arizona or University of Louisville with that racetrack program. So, you know, in Kentucky, I was a journalism major. So to really get that firsthand experience, it was through that. And then, you know, you hear all the stories. I mean, Jude will show you the pictures of Here's little Doug O'Neill following around the barn, or little Peter Miller. And I mean, he's kind of become like the coaching tree here. Is, you know, you work for Jude, and then you can end up being a grade one trainer.
Yeah, it's not quite Lucas, but it's not too far off.
Because we can't afford the white bridles.
Yeah, but we've had a lot of people come through over the years that have really done well, and I'm proud of all the people that worked for me over the years that have gone on and embraced the business and done well. So it's It's great. I appreciate the kind words, but you know, you did a lot of hustling on your own, and certainly, you know, deserve a lot of the credit. As you were going through, you know, learning the game and all that, you were doing a lot of other jobs. You were stable agent and you know, different things. What kind of contributed to your success as a trainer? What with those jobs? What could you say about who's been instrumental in your life?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything, Drew. To be honest, where every job I've had, I always kind of give it my all, and I put all my attention into it, and my focus in it. And so when you look back as a trainer, there are certain things you learn, like whether it be, you know, as a clocker. Okay, now I know how to clock horses. I know what I'm looking for, and that time isn't really that important when you're clocking horses. It's how they're moving and how they're doing it. And, you know, sometimes maybe it's the double gallop out where people, you know, they stop paying attention and you're still watching it. You know, when you're writing for like the Thoroughbred Times and stuff like that, working with you guys on the Horse Racing Radio Network, you learn about how important it is to give of your time to the media. How, you know, the media is sitting there trying to grow the sport, and you have to play a part in that. When you're a trainer, whether you're, you know, training a stable full of top horses or you have one top horse, you know, whatever access that they want, you try and be as accommodating to that as you can, and try and bring more people in, because that's what this sport needs. And so any chance we get, you know, we let, you know, Biscuits come out and see the people and do interviews. And you know, we bring fans all the time at Saratoga, especially. You know, I'll meet fans at the rail, and I'll take them back on the golf cart, and they'll come back to the barn, and we'll give them like a private stable tour and things like that. And you know, it's just about, you know, anything we can to help the perception of the game, I think, is something that I've definitely learned a lot over the years as well.
Yeah, it's so important, and you know, it's nice to give people access, and certainly the press. I mean, the press can really be your friend in a lot of situations, and you really want to further the game, because we need all the fans we can get, and it's good that you have that idea. In case you're just joining us, this is Jude Feld with Anthony Stabile, and you're listening to Trainer Talk with Chad Summers. So when you got Mind Your Biscuits, how did that go? How did you acquire him, and talk about that experience?
So when he was a yearling, he was at the Fasig Tipton sale up at Saratoga, the New York Bred sale. And me and my dad and my brother, we've had some horses before, and we're looking at having another one. And, you know, obviously the New York Bred program being what it is, we decided to kind of focus in on that particular sale and see if we can find one.
You're not going
to
give a word to the wise, a shout out here right now?
Oh, she was a crazy horse off a farm. We got a lot of those stories. That was my first horse with Jude, Sir Alec, we got for $1 that Sean Feld bought. Believe me, we got plenty of those stories. But this Mind Your Biscuit story is a little bit different. So with him, we're at the Fasig sale, and Select Sales had so many New York Breds that year that they rented an entire temporary tent that was in the parking lot where normally cars valet park. And I watched this horse, and it was so tight that you couldn't really watch them walk really good. And Jude, you know, it's so important with yearlings. You want to see their walk. You want to see their movement. And we liked what we saw from him, but we weren't really sure. And then he's walking to the ring. And then when he walked to the ring, you saw kind of the stride he had. So we're looking around, and he didn't sell. And we're like, all right, perfect. RNA for $47,000. And at the time, I was with Susan Montaigne, who SPM sales, and we were going to pinhook a horse together to resell the two-year-old sales. So the horse didn't sell, and myself, my dad, my brother, and Susie were able to buy half the horse from the owners. We went in, and the horse started training. And every time I went to the farm, he got better and better, and he just looked like a picture. It was great. I tried to buy them out of the horse, because I didn't want to take him to the sale anymore. I want him to be a racer. I mean, this is the horse you're looking for. And they asked for a lot of money, and so I was like, let's just take him to the sale. I don't have that kind of money. And we got to the April sale, the Ocala April sale, and he didn't sell again for $47,000. At that point, I begged them to stay in. I told Susie and Carrie Brogdon from Select Sales at the time, you know, I love this horse. Like, let's go on with him. And, you know, that's just, racing's really not their game. And so at that point, I was able to buy them out, and I brought Jay Stables on. to buy out the other half, and we just kind of went on with it. And you know, he's been just a pleasure to be around his entire career.
Yeah, you know, one thing you were talking about earlier, how your dad used to take you to the races and stuff. How far back does that love of the sport go? Did his parents take him to the races, or do you know? Do you know?
So not really. His dad was a big risk taker, which was funny because he, I think, by proxy because of that, was a very little risk taker. And so, like, buying a horse, thankfully the first horse we ever bought him into was Sir Alec, which cost us a dollar. So his 10% was 10 cents. So that was a good, like, getting involved into the game, even though he didn't make it to the races for us. He did become a really nice show horse, though. But that was – his thing was he was a college DJ at Fredonia College in upstate New York, and he had his own radio show. And he would give out some predictions, and he predicted that Seattle Slough would win the Triple Crown.
Wow.
In like November of his 2-year-old year. Now, mind you, this is the 70s. Nobody cares about horse racing in Fredonia. Probably 7 people listened to the show on the college radio station. But because he gave out that Triple Crown winner, he thinks he had a following. It's kind of like you, Anthony. He thinks he has a following, and everybody's into it. And so he was really, really hooked at that point.
Well, I was going to say, it's one more winner. One more winner than you gave out on the air all your years here at HRRN. So we know you didn't get your handicapping prowess from your old man, from Scott.
Well, the reason that I bring that up is because, you know, I would see your father when you would run that horse, and the look on his face was so much different than any other time that I'd seen him at the track or whatever. It was like it was almost like he was pregnant. He had this like glow on, you know, and his eyes had this certain glint, and it's just meant so much to him to have a nice horse. And I think that's really cool that you've been able to provide him that experience.
Well, I think the big thing is, you know, with our background, I mean, he's an electrical contractor by trade. And so even if you come out as a fan and you like to play the horses and you like coming out for the big races, you never, ever think I'm going to have a horse, A. And then, B, if I have a horse, I'll be happy if he's a 30 claimer just trying to get a couple of pictures taken. And so to have a horse that, you know, that I have a piece of, my dad, my brother, you know, kind of a whole family affair, and, you know, to be competing on these stages, internationally and domestically, and Grade One races, it's really kind of surreal, and it's not something that's an everyday proposition, because you don't have 10 cracks at it. It's not like, oh, okay, we went out to the sale and we bought 10 horses, and you know, 2 of them are graded stake horses, and 2 of them didn't run and stuff like that. This was our one chance, and with that one chance, he's turned into, you know, what he's turned into.
Yeah, when you got the horse, you weren't training him originally. How did that go? When did you decide that you were going to take him over?
Not for a while, to be honest. I wasn't sure that I ever really wanted to be a trainer. I mean, I love this game, and I love every bit of the game. But the, you know, when you're a trainer, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. You're there 7 days a week, 365. You get maybe an hour and a half for lunch or sleep, and you come back at 2:30, 3 o'clock. You're doing chores again, and you know, you go home at 5:36, and you come back at 8:30 to do night check. And you know, it really kind of kills, you know, any part of having any kind of social life or anything like that. You know, if you want to be a successful trainer, and obviously you need to have a really good staff, but you have to have a lot of pride in your work and commit to that time. So it wasn't something that I was sure I wanted to do. When we brought him in originally, I thought about giving him to Joe Sharp. Joe Sharp had just started training, but he was staying in Kentucky, had a small string in New York, and we didn't really want that. So I sent him down to Florida with the other Jay Stables horses. I was kind of the racing manager at the time. And we had a trainer named Roderick Rodriguez, who was a phenomenal trainer and is a phenomenal trainer. And you know, I learned a lot from him down there, and I'd go back and forth between New York and Florida. We had a filly named Off the Tracks at that time, who would go on to be a Grade One winner as well. And we brought the two of them up to Saratoga. That was 3 years ago. It was here's Mind Your Biscuits, an unraced 2-year-old, and Off the Tracks, who had just broken her maiden. And Off the Tracks won the Schuylerville, and he ran 2 seconds up there. And you know, that was the thing where, you know, it was just me and Rod, and we just kind of did everything together, and it was great. And, you know, things kind of progressed forward. And at that point, the following year, when we came up to New York, it just didn't make sense. You know, Rod had more horses in Florida at the time. And so, you know, we were going to keep him in New York year round. At that point, move them to Robert Falcone, and then just kind of continue to progress through that. And it was really kind of just at the behest of some clients asking me to open up a public stable that I did it. I really wasn't looking to take out my license or do all this stuff. I was happy having, you know, six or seven horses, just kind of managing them and spending a lot of time at the barn, but, you know, letting other people kind of do their thing. And it just kind of progressed through that, where I had what I thought was going to be a really good opportunity. And to do that, I had to go out on my own and kind of hang my own shingle.
You're being very, very kind. You're being very politically correct in your answers here tonight. But I'm not going to let you get away with it, because I watched what went on for the last 3 years. I've seen it with my own two eyes. You've lived with that horse. And I'm not saying that in a figurative sense. But you literally, there have been days and nights where you have slept in front of his stall. So, yeah, you didn't train him, but you've been there literally every single step of the way with him.
Well, I think it's one of those things when you have, you know, these horses that you care about, they're like your kids, and, you know, you got to know them inside and out, and spending time with them when nobody else is there, sometimes you learn more about a horse than you do how they're training in the morning time or how they cool out or what happens in the afternoon. To be honest with you, night check is probably my favorite time of coming to the barn, because it's just you and the horses, and there's no riffraff or none of that other stuff. And, you know, you get an idea of, you know, who's leaving what feed, and, you know, who's not drinking enough water, and who's lying down a lot, and, you know, things like that. And I think that's important.
How do you feel now that you've been training for a couple years about training?
Tired. You know, I learned that I don't want to have a super stable. You know, when I first started, you know, when we came back from Dubai, we went to Dubai and we had like six horses last year in 2017. And when you win on that stage in front of the world, you know, a lot of things happen, and they happen very quickly. And we went from five, six horses to about 50 in about a month and a half. And we're in three different barns at Saratoga, and I got four golf carts, and yet I'm walking everywhere because I can't find any of my golf carts. And, you know, you have big owners, and you have, like, their E-string horses. And when you develop a horse like Mind Your Biscuits into Biscuits, that was a relatively inexpensive purchase, you get everybody else's relatively inexpensive purchase, but some of them aren't of that caliber. And they all expect, well, you did it with this son of posse, you know, why can't you do it with my? I think I've seen every posse that's been born in the last 4 years. And, you know, you try and be kind, and you try and tell them. And, you know, I thought incorrectly that it was an easy game. I'm like, yeah, you know, we planned for this. We were prepping for the race in Dubai, and we won it. And, you know, some of the other horses were running well. I can take, you know, you know, the zebra from Racing Stripes and win the Travers with them. It's not that easy. And you learn that you have to be more selective with the horses you take. You have to know your strengths and your weaknesses and try and, you know, kind of put a team together who can overcome your weaknesses. And that's important. You know, the most important thing as a trainer are the horses, one. And then the second thing is you have to have a good staff that you can rely upon.
Yeah, so you've decided that the smaller stable is for you, and you want to totally be hands-on.
Yeah, it's just kind of how I operate. It's a lot easier to sleep in one barn than it is to sleep in three barns. So it's just one of those things where, you know, I like being able to see things. Now, the problem when you're a trainer and when you like racing, you need action. So when you have that smaller barn, not only is the racing office mad at you because you're not making entries every day, but you want to run. You start looking. I claimed the horse this winter in Gulfstream for like $6,000 because I was bored. That was a bad idea. You know, like, yeah. But you want some action. You want, you know, it's nice developing babies, but I mean, you know, Jude, how many of those, you know, cowbred homebreds that you had, that when you're developing those babies, you want to make the races, but at the same time, you can't sacrifice the growth that they need to go through, and sometimes it takes them time to make it to the races.
Yeah, it is a long-term process, and you have to have clients that are willing to take the long view as well. You know, lots of trainers come on this program and say, you know, the horses are the easy part, but it's the clients that are the tough part. And everybody, as you mentioned, has an expectation of what their horse is supposed to be and what they think it should be. And that's like imposed upon you. So sometimes that's the hardest part, is to try to get people to, you know, give up on their horse. And it's, they feel the same way about, you know, their horse that can't run as you do about the horse that you own that can run. And it sometimes creates a little bit of friction, you know, but you're trying to do the best you can for them. And sometimes they don't see it. And that's what makes training horses more difficult than it needs to be.
Well, I think that's the important thing too, Jude, is, you know, you have to have a trust with your clients. You know, if they're enlisting you to take care of their horses, and I can't stress this enough, they have to be able to trust you that you have their best interest in mind. The only way we make any money as a trainer is if they're first, second, or third. You know, you don't, the old adage where, oh, that's a day rate trainer. I like to meet those guys because I lose money every day. Every day I wake up and I go to the barn, I'm losing, you know, $12 a day per stall, not even including everything else, workers' comp and everything else. So, you know, you're trying to make the races, and they have to allow you the opportunity to do that. And one of the things that I've done now, you know, I've been blessed over the last couple of years to do well financially, you know, through the horses and stuff. And, you know, I have a stake in most of my horses now. And so it's a lot easier to talk to some of your clients when you got skin in the game too. You're not just the trainer,
Absolutely. But
I'm also, you know, part of the owner. And if you're part of the ownership group, you know, they kind of feel like, all right, well, we're on the same playing field now.
Yeah, well, it's I always used to tell people, everybody wants to be your partner, but they don't realize that it's your horse that ends up in the pony stall, because you got to have the full stall for your, you know, your client's horse. And being a trainer's partner, has, it's a double-edged sword. You know, it can be good, but it can also, you know, mean you're going to take the short end of the stick sometimes, because that's what the trainer has to do in order to take care of his clients. So but it's nice that you're able to participate with those horses, and you know, because that's another way to make some money, is to be able to race your own. And you know, that's why I think Mick Ruiz has the best job in the world. He can't get fired.
give him another 30 days and we'll see, right?
Let's talk for a minute about,
we got to go to break. We'll talk when we come back. This is Jude Feld, and you're listening to Trainer Talk, sponsored by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'll pay some bills and be right back.
Selected sales, superior results. Nominate now to Phasic Tipton's selected yearling sales, which are stronger than ever. The July sale for precocious athletic yearlings, the prestigious Saratoga sale, where leading buyers have searched for their next champion or classic winner for nearly 100 years, and the New York bred sale, which offers the cream of the New York bred crop. Learn more and nominate at phasicnoms.com. Phasic Tipton selected yearling sales, stronger than ever.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Kentucky Downs is home to 5 outstanding days of racing beginning September 1st, highlighted by 14 stakes races, 4 graded stakes, and a record $10 million in purses, with increases to the Calumet Farm Kentucky Turf Cup and the Taurus Mile. The new Kentucky Downs Juvenile Turf Sprint will serve as a stepping stone to the new Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, and all Kentuckybreds race for $130,000 in maiden events and $145,000 in allowance races. Kentucky Downs, beginning September 1st. Talking with Dr. Jim Chiappetta of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why focus on the nose? Isn't the throat a big problem in racehorses?
Mike, when we think about the upper airway in horses, we typically end up putting on a tongue tie or operating on its throat to improve airflow. What you may find interesting is that when we measure the anatomy of the upper airway and the flow, the narrowest part that causes the greatest resistance in all horses is the nasal passages. That's where the strips work. If you want to improve airflow to the lungs, you need to consider the nasal passages.
Learn more at flarestrips.com/learn.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
300 meters out, Morrowind coming around their heels, Comacast down the outside, and Mind Your Biscuits is storming right down the center of the track. Here comes Biscuits! Mind Your Biscuits stormed to the front 100 meters out from Comacast, and Mind Your Biscuits raced away to win the Dubai Golden Shaheen. Photo for the Miners, Morrowind and Comacast, then St. Joe Bay, followed by Stalwalk and Dude Cool Cowboy, Not Listening to Me, and then came Dundonald, My Catch, Ronaldo the Wizard, Dios Carita, High on Life, Muarab, and Wild Dude back in the tail.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. This is Jude Feld alongside Anthony Stabile with our special guest trainer, Chad Summers. I wanted to remind you that if you missed any portion of this show, it will be archived on our website, horseracingradio.net, and is also available at Horse Racing Radio on iTunes. Chad, that was pretty cool. Terry Spargo, his last meeting at Dubai to get that call for your highlight tape. Fantastic day, huh?
Oh, that day was unbelievable. That was the first Dubai one, and you know, I think I listened to that call probably about 3,500 times, and I definitely had it memorized by the 17-hour flight home. coming back, that
all the horses to the very end.
Oh yeah, no, I felt so bad that horse was in the tails, but it's just one of the ways that it goes. And it was kind of disappointing because the guy this year, that call was just so-so. In fact, Anthony likes the Hong Kong version, doesn't even know what the guy's saying.
No, it's the Arabic. It's the Arabic version. Okay. The Arabic version of your call of Biscuits this year is 55 seconds of bliss. If you can find it, I tweeted it out at the Big Ace. It's tweeted that you won on March 31st on my birthday. I'll go find it. It's the most amazing. Jude, have you heard this?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's 55 seconds of bliss. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. This guy is as fired up as one could possibly. If the Iron Sheik and the Ultimate Warrior had a son, it would be this guy. Unbelievable intensity in this call.
But, you know, you talk about that first year, and it's funny because I was very, very confident. We'd watched Sharp Azteca in the first race, and I thought he was kind of much the best. And I thought us and Sharp Azteca are very similar, you know, horses, and I thought our race was a little bit easier. So I had a lot of confidence going into that race. He almost killed the groom, getting ready, putting the bandages on like 20 minutes before the race. Like he had his game face on. And, you know, I thought I was very confident, and the horse goes wide, no problem, the 14 posts, no big deal, and we win the race. And I thought, man, I said, this is an easy game. I did it all, like, the right way, no problem. And then Ron Anderson, jockey agent Ron Anderson, Joel Rosario's agent, sent me a clip. I guess TVG had me, like, kind of rooting the horse home and everything. And my face
the first
is
year.
Yeah, the first year. My face is white as a ghost. And I thought, like, on the inside, I felt very confident. But on the outside, it looked like I was going to pass out.
And this is the Malibu we're talking about?
No,
the Golden Sheen.
No, the Golden Sheen the first
year. Malibu was a phenomenal one, too. They had you on the route. Yeah, they had you on the route. And you literally exhale when the race is over. Like, you literally just let out a big exhale. I don't even know if you realize you're doing it. And then Yeah, the Dubai in 2017 was fantastic. I couldn't even imagine what Dubai this year looked like, because your quote after the race was you thought you had it won three jumps after the wire.
Well,
so
this year it was weird. Obviously the race was much tougher, and I was kind of freaking out because speed was playing really, really good, and I had met with the kind of the tradition we always have with me and Joel is we'll meet on Wednesday after the draw comes out and everything, and then we'll meet again on Friday and we'll come up with our strategy. And we had plans like A through F, okay? Cause I'll never forget. This was the thing. When I was on the Horse Racing Radio Network, I'll never forget this. It was a Breeders' Cup countdown show, and Mike Penna had Mike Smith on. And he said, Mike, you know, what are you thinking when you're in the saddle? And he goes, oh, listen, brother, I got plan A, B, C, all the way through Z. And that line always stuck with me. So I always make it a point with Joel. We have plans A, B, C, D, all the way through Z. And how the track was playing on that day, I'm waiting for Rosario. I'm sprinting to the jocks room after we saddle the horse, because I tell him we have to go to plan ZZ because you got to get off the rail. The rail's dead. I said speed's good, but the rail's no good because the kickback hurts. It's not like the normal sand that we have right over here in North America. And Rayo was really fighting the kickback in the UAE Derby against Mendelssohn. And I said, look, whatever we do, we got to get off the rail. I said, we'll sacrifice some ground, and we got to get off the rail. And so I know that we're far out of it, and I'm watching the race, and, of course, there's 13 cameras on me, because once they find out you're a rooter, every camera thinks it's great to just have all eyes on you. So you can't really watch the race the way you really want to, right? So you're watching the race, and you got these cameras on you, and I see kind of like a little bit. There's a big screen, you know, in Dubai, and you try and – he's making like a move, so I moved up a little bit from where I was in the paddock. I moved up to kind of see a little bit closer, and then all of a sudden his chicklet was gone, and they only focused in on XY Jed and Jordan Sport and Roy H., and I was like, oh, man, where'd we go? And they're now around the turn, and I can't find our horse. I have no idea. I was like, man, this was a bad idea. Like, maybe everybody was right. And so as they get a little bit closer, I see us kind of like a blur coming. I was like, well, maybe we can run third. I said, third's 200,000. I said, I'll break even on the trip. I'm like, that's okay. And then within maybe 5 seconds, we won the race. And I never had a chance to think we can be second. I never had a chance to think that we would win the race. I saw Scott Hazelton's face. Scott Hazelton was doing the world feed. And I saw his face. And it just like his jaw dropped. I was like, oh, I guess we won. And then sure enough, that was it.
It wasn't.
The year before was great because I was like kind of taking it all in. Like by the quarter pole, you knew you were going to be a winner so long as you didn't fall off. This year, I never thought I was a winner. And maybe I got my revenge was taken back out on me on the Met Mile this year. As George liked to say, we got Navarro'd at the wire.
Let's do this. Let's listen to the 2018 Dubai Golden Shaheen, and that way you can root exactly how you want, and Anthony can film it.
Roy H came to the outside. Matera Sky for Japan is battling on well. A gap off to Mind Your Biscuits inside the final 250.
Come on, Joel, where are
you? XY Jed is the front runner. Roy H having his work to try and get him down the outside. It's XY Jed in front. Counting at him is Roy H. Mind Your Biscuits begins to fly. XY Jed, Roy H, Mind Your Biscuits down the outside. XY Jed, Mind Your Biscuits. Flew got him. Mind Your Biscuits from last takes out the Golden Shaheen from XY Jed. And Roy H followed by Wild Dude.
It was kind of like an afterthought, huh? It's like,
terrible call. I mean, it's one of the most dramatic finishes, right, in Dubai. And yeah, Biscuits got him. Yeah, regular two-minute. Biscuits got him.
What was it
like? Like a Wednesday, you know, like the third race on Wednesday in Assatoka Downs.
I'm telling you, not on the Arabic call.
What?
On the Arabic call, the building's going to fall down on top of your head, my man. That's what happens. It's just, it's unbelievable. You said something interesting, because you're one of the most confident people I know. At the quarter pole, though, before he started doing what Biscuits does, did you second guess yourself? Did you say to yourself, well, maybe these people, like, did you really think that?
I didn't think we had a chance to win. The only time I've ever questioned myself about Biscuits was twice, I should say. In the four-girl last year, because I never wanted to run, and I tricked myself into running. And when we ran in the Breeders' Cup the first year, and after the first quarter mile, he's about 20 lengths out of it. And I said, man, I guess I'm just a New York bred. And then he came with this flying run, kind of similar to Dubai. He got beat a length and a quarter for the whole thing and with some traffic trouble. But the first quarter mile, I was like, man, I must be the biggest dummy in the face of the earth. Like, I'm telling everybody we're going to the Breeders' Cup, and they're all looking at me like I got four heads. I remember when I told Robert Falcone, I said, we're going to go to the Breeders' Cup after he came out of the Gallant Bob so good. And he looks at me, he goes, what? And he was afraid to fly. He didn't want to go because he didn't want to get on a plane. He needs like three Xanax to get to New Jersey on a plane. So we're sitting there, and I'm like, listen, we're going to go to the Breeders' Cup. And he goes, no. He goes, it's a joke. And he breezed, right? And it's like one of his last breezes before he went over. He went 46-1 with Joel. And I'm like, man, he breezed like a monster. Like, he never has to breeze this fast. And he did it all on his own. And Rob's like, well, I had him in 49. And I was like, no. I got 46 and change. And we called the clocker, and the clocker had 46 and change. I said, listen, Rob, I said, go back and you ask Joel. If Joel says he's ready, we'll go. If not, that's fine. We won't go. We'll stay in New York. You don't have to get on a plane. No big deal. And Joel gets off the horse with this cat ate the canary grin and didn't have to say anything. Rob goes, all right, I guess we can go. But I wasn't confident after the first quarter mile in the Breeders' Cup that first year.
Well, that's a great story. It's nice when the jocks get off with that ear-to-ear grin. I've seen that grin before. In case you're joining us a little late, this is Jude Feld with Anthony Stabile, and you're listening to Trainer Talk with Chad Summers. Chad, you said you lost your horse a little bit on the turn. He was racing for the first time in the Yoshida Silks. You know, it was kind of a bit of a shock to see him coming in those colors, even for me. You know, when I see those colors, it reminds me of Tommy Doyle back in the day, who used to have horses for Zenya Yoshida, you know, many years ago at San Anita.
His father, sure.
And, you know, was that kind of weird for you to have that change of colors and almost like...
So I'll give you a funny story. And Anthony was with me. So we know we're going to run in his silks when I sold him after Dubai this year. And I said, all right, Anthony, I guess we got to make the blinkers. You know, you got to have the matching set. So I let Anthony kind of choose the color scheme.
I designed the blinkers.
And I'm sitting there, and it's the day of the race, and I got both sets of blinkers out. I got the J Stable blue ones that he's had all the success in, and I got the brand new Shad Eye Farms for Mr. Yoshida. And I sat there, and I said, I can't do it. And my groom goes crazy. You know, this my groom, Ricky, he needs to coordinate everything. My exercise rider, he needs to coordinate everything. You know, my exercise rider loves the camera so much now that he buys outfits specifically. Like when we go to Breeders' Cup, this is my Monday outfit. This is my Tuesday outfit. Ricky, the groom, he sits there. He's got the matching hat. He goes, you can't do this. He goes, it doesn't coordinate. And it's just one of those things where
he tries to coordinate you.
No. Well, he coordinates himself. I'm a lost cause.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where I just couldn't do it, and we got beat in nose. And next time when he runs back, we will have the shout out blinkers on. But I just couldn't do it. And the silks they're a little strange. You know, obviously you have a horse like this for the last 4 years, and he runs every time, but. It's just one of those things where when he runs, I know where he is at all times. I don't really need a TV or anything or look at the silks. I look at him, and I know his stride so well that I can pick him out of any kind of lineup that there is.
And it's kind of something you're used to, obviously not to the extent with everything in every sense of the word you've haven't invested in Mind Your Biscuits. But before we went to break, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Your biggest talent, besides your modesty, is probably that was a joke, by the way. Nobody laughed. Your biggest talent is probably picking out a horse, and you've done. There's been a lot of turnover. You've taken a lot of money off the table for your clients in the past. I mean, the year you bought Biscuits and Off the Tracks, there were four. There were three or four others that were.
No, it's one of those things when
Tommy Macho is one of the first ones that comes to mind.
When you buy horses and you're not training for the FIPS, right? And you're a racing manager or whatever, you have it's still a business. And we love the sport and everything else. And look, if it was up to me, I would never sell a piece of Biscuits ever. But you know, sometimes you have to do the pertinent thing to keep your business going, to keep your owners going. You know, not every horse is going to be Mind Your Biscuits. And so when you do work together and develop nice horses, sometimes you have to move them on. And, you know, Off the Tracks was a tough one. I still think that Off the Tracks might have been just as good as Mind Your Biscuits. People look at me like I have three heads, but I mean, she was the real deal. She was undefeated for us. She was 3-for-3, and you know, would have been one of the favorites for the Kentucky Oaks when we sold her to Newton and her farm, and she went to Todd Pletcher. And you know, the good thing is when we've sold them, they've gone on to do good things. So you look at off the track, she went on to win the Grade One Mother Goose. She should have won the Grade One test. Tommy Macho, we sold after his maiden race. He finished third at 86-1, and he went on to make $960,000, multiple Grade Two winner, Grade One place in the Penn Derby behind Frosted. You know, those things happen, and it's a good thing for our clients when they can go on and do well afterwards. And that's the thing with Biscuits as well. And, you know, if you look at Biscuits' progression, it hasn't been, oh, he threw a freaky good race out there. He's gotten better and better every single year and has progressed the right way. And that's something that we take a lot of pride in.
Is that something that gives you confidence now as you're starting to stretch him out?
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, I've always thought that he can stretch out. And again, people think I'm crazy, which is kind of the norm, I think, Anthony.
This is a recurring theme on this show.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're probably right. I mean, I should probably be one of those straitjackets and not being able to saddle horses.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where with this horse, I've always wanted to stretch him out. It was just we always had our targets. And it just made sense in the rhythm of things, the way that everything flew. That was what was the next spot. But I always wanted to end his career in the Pegasus, and I'm not going to get the chance to do that now. So this seemed like as good a time as any to kind of start stretching him out. And, you know, looking at the older division, how it is, and he's much kinder now on the track in the morning time than he used to be, so he settles, and I can train him further without him getting warm. And it's just one of those things where I don't see why he can't be like Gunrunner. Sit kind of that same trip that Gunrunner did in the Whitney last year, sit third. And, you know, if they go the first half mile in 47 and 48 seconds and it's a 7-furlong sprint home, I don't think there's anybody else in the country that can sprint home with us. If he gets the two turns, he's going to be, you know, very, very difficult to reckon with. And that's what we're going to find out on August 4th in the Whitney is whether or not he can. But I'm willing to say that he can. And if he can, then we'll look on later on down the year, you know, down at Churchill Downs.
It's been my experience that when horses get older, they handle the distance racing much better. And I think that what you said is so true, that they're more relaxed. And the fact that he's more relaxed in the morning gives you a big edge. But I think they can handle the extra distance as they age. I mean, I've had horses that never ran long in their life and claimed them when they were 8 years old and stretched them out and they, you know, run 134. I mean, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people miss sometimes is that age really does mellow a lot of horses. And Bobby Frankel taught me that horses change from day to day, from year to year. They're not the same. So you have to train them differently. You can't train the horse the same way his whole life.
Right, I think that's the key too. If you are going to make this transition, you have to train differently. So when our half mile works, might stay halves and 5/8. Now, before the Met Mile, we worked them 3/4 and 11-4. Before he runs in the Whitney, he'll work a good 7/8 and gallop out a mile and an eighth. You know, 2 weeks before the race on the 20th. Like, you know, so you stretch them out. You're going longer, slower gallops than normally you would go in the past. And he's taken well to it. And that kind of gives us a lot of confidence moving forward. The thing that really happens is, you know, when you listen to kind of the outside people, the Twitter lovers of the world and stuff like that, where, you know, it's all about sex sells. Okay, and he has this move like you saw in Dubai or you see in the Breeders' Cup where when he's at the back of the pack or in the tails, right, when he's in the back of the pack, he can make this flourish of a run. And it's dynamic and it's sexy and it's great, and there aren't a lot of sprinters that can make a move like that. And when he stretches out, whether it be the 7/8 Malibu or the Mile Met Mile, it's more of a grind. And from a numbers perspective, his numbers are better the further he's gone.
His two best numbers are the mile races.
Are the Cigar Mile and the Met Mile. And I know that's only one turn. But to me, that's the thing where it's not sexy. He's not making this, you know, edge of your seat, you know, hold tight, watch. Can he get there? Well, that's not good for my heart either. So
it wasn't good for mine Met Mile Day either, my friend.
But it's one of those things where let him draw off and win by five. I would much rather he win by five than lose by a nose or win by a nose. It's great, and you know, who knows where we'll end up, you know, in the Breeders' Cup. But for right now, why not let him try and stretch and see if we can do it?
Jude talked about how the great Bobby Frankel always taught him about, and, you know, day to day, week to week, year to year. It's probably one of the things a lot of trainers overlook. There's not one thing about this horse you're going to overlook. And it you've talked about his personality and stuff pretty extensively. We really haven't heard much of it here on HRN. So tell us a little bit about Biscuits, the horse. So you've told me a million times you feel like you're dealing with a human being when you deal with this horse.
Oh, he's just as crazy as I am. I think that's the good thing.
That's tough. That would be very tough.
For a while, that's how it was. When he was he just turned three and we were at Calder, and I'm sorry, Gulfstream Park West, When we were at Gulfstream Park West, which at the time was still called Calder, they had these like turkey duck chicken things, like turduckins. They look like something out of like a
tasty.
Yeah, they look like one of those John Madden things he's giving away on the Thanksgiving Day football game. And this horse was scared out of his mind of these things. And nobody can walk him because he would try and get loose from anybody. Because if he saw one of these turducken things, he'd either want to kick it like it's a field goal, or he'd just want to run away from it.
At least one of yous could kick then.
Yeah, probably. So those were kind of things. So all of a sudden, I was just listening to rap music one day when I was grooming him and doing him up, and he'd just mellow out. I said, wonder if when I walk him, if I play this music, if he'll just kind of relax and not pay attention to the turduckins and all the other riffraff. And sure enough, it happened. And everything was great. He liked the rap music. There's only certain rap music he likes. He's very particular.
What does he listen to?
So for his 3-year-old year, it was a mix of like the 2000 raps. And then if he doesn't like something, he'll tell you. Like, he'll pin his ears back and you change it to the next song and he's fine again. He's he's not a huge fan of Outkast. And it just kind of continued through it. It really annoyed Scott Blasi at the Breeders' Cup. I was walking him, and he had Gunrunner getting ready for the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. And he's like, can you shut that off? And I'm, nope, not going to happen. Like, that's just the way the horse is. And, you know, there's a lot of stories like that. You know, there's certain peppermints that he'll like. He doesn't like the hard ones. It needs to be a soft one. Can't be cinnamon flavored or things like that. Like, he's just he has his things. When I make his feed, if I don't make it the particular way, he won't eat it. He's changed his sweet feed more than any horse I've ever seen in my life. I have to change his sweet feed like every 6 weeks. And then sometimes he'll get applesauce, sometimes he'll get garlic in his feed, just the right amount of hot water. Then you put some feed in, some supplements, mix it, then you do it a little bit more. Like, I feel like I'm Ratatouille.
We're gonna get a video of this, Jude. Jude, in your life, you've probably fed 10,000 horses carrots. Would that be a safe number?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
You ever see a horse eat a carrot sideways?
I have seen him do it, but usually by accident, not on purpose.
No. This horse, we're going to take a video next Tuesday. I spend my Tuesdays with Chad and Biscuits at the barn. I'm going to take a video next Tuesday, and we'll tweet it out. He eats the carrot. When it gets too thick towards the bottom,
that was a cherish it.
He has to eat it sideways.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. He literally turns the carrot in your hand.
And slowly. Like, it's not like one giant bite.
Nope.
Like, he wants the carrot to last as long as it can.
They have boxing matches.
Oh, yeah. No, we've done it.
Chad and Biscuits have boxed. That I've tweeted out. The boxing match, Biscuits always wins. It's seeing it firsthand, and again, I've been around thousands of horses. It's amazing. And what really gets me is the relationship between the two of them. Like, you know, you said this earlier. For those of you that don't know, Chad has a 6-year-old son, Sean. You really have two kids, though. Would that be correct?
Probably. No, it's not going to be easy to send them both to Japan next year.
Does Sean know he's going to become a ninja?
Not yet, no.
He would be all for that, though.
He does now. I'm sure he's listening.
He's a risk taker. Yeah. He's a risk taker. I can tell you that.
You mentioned something, Chad, just kind of sort of in passing. You didn't even complete your thought, but you said going to work him 7/8 out, a mile and an eighth on the 20th. How far in advance do you plan as you're training him?
Oh, we have like three plans right now, depending on the Whitney. It's through the year. I mean, you have ideas. You know, like, every day is a different day on the weather, or if he leaves feed or have a fever or something like that. Like, I'm not a guy that makes my trainer chart a week in advance, but when I have the opportunity with a nice horse, when you don't have to worry about races not going in a condition book and you can plan out things, this is my plan. Okay, he's going to do this, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. He's going to have his last big work 2 weeks before, and it's always on a Friday in case I need the extra day for recovery for me and him if he does too much. And so you always just kind of plan it out. And it really started with Biscuits when he was a two-year-old before the race at Finger Lakes. Missed a couple of days, had to blow him out on a Tuesday before the $200,000 race at Finger Lakes on Saturday. Wanted the exercise rider to go 38. He went 33 flat. And at that point, I said, I'm going to get walkie-talkies, and I'm going to plan this out a little bit better.
So you're going to do the Baffert thing.
Absolutely.
There you go.
That's why I got the blue suit.
The Friday before, 2 weeks before the Met Mile, on a Thursday night, I was leaving after the call-in show, and Chad was coming back. I said, you forget something? He goes, no, I want to go watch my work tomorrow. Chad likes to big work them 2 weeks out instead of the week out. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, I'm going to go watch the work. And he was dead serious. Like, he says things to people that lead them to want to get the guys with the white coats, but he's dead serious when he says them. And he literally went upstairs and thought about the work. It's funny, in that barn, it is the lightest and loosest barn you'll ever see until work day and race day. And it's like, you know, clear the mechanism. It's really a remarkable thing to see him go, because he was one of my best friends, and he's such a goofball most of the time. It's amazing what and Biscuits leads that charge, because Biscuits knows when it's go time, and everybody follows his lead.
Well, it's like visualizing your shot in golf. That kind of thing. It can lead to success, and it's a great idea. We only got 2 minutes left. Real quick, Chad, when you're not at the track, which sounds like you're there most of the time, is there anything you like to do for fun?
That's a good question, right? Not really.
Take me to lunch and dinner.
No, I mean, we go out, you know, as much time as I can spend with my son and doing his things. You know, he's getting older now, so, you know, playing the soccer and the baseball and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's one of those things when I really feel like when you're a trainer, there's not a big off switch, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely not. Well, that was a fantastic conversation we had, guys, and really enjoyed it. Went way faster than I thought it was going to go. So I should have known, though, with you two guys.
Before, what Chad said to you about how he probably wouldn't be training if it wasn't for you, Chad brought me on here at HRN and has done so much more. And I could never, there's nothing I could do that could ever thank him enough. And he's great for the sport. And I think Biscuits will keep on keeping on.
Well, thanks to Chad Summers for taking the time to hang out with us this evening. He'll be receiving a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair Strips. A special thank you to our producer, Lee Delapina, for keeping us in line and on time. You've been listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. This is Jude Feld for Anthony Stabile. And from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studios, I wish everyone a good night.